Okay, to get started, I just want to back up a little bit over what was covered during the last 3 weeks with Father John. In the first couple of weeks, he talked about Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 and the creation of man and woman, and then the fall that we read about in Genesis 3. In Ephesians 5, he laid out for us what marriage between a man and a woman is to resemble. And then last week, he gave a beautiful talk on fatherhood. And tonight, I am going to focus on the apostolic letter, Mulieris Dignitatum, which means on the dignity and vocation of woman. Now, in splitting that up, him last week and me this week, it does not imply division, which so often our culture has us thinking about the division between men and women. But in fact, we did that to give each the unique perspective that the Holy Spirit is really shining His light upon as to who God created women to be and who He has created men to be. In preparing for this talk, it gave me an opportunity to go back and take a look at the document again and just review some of my notes from before. And I thought, you know, it's really too bad that the Holy Father didn't follow this up and write something on the dignity and vocation of man. Because, one, men could use it. But I say that in a way because I see how valuable it has been for women, how it has really touched their hearts for those that have sat and read and prayed with the document. Because the question in this apostolic letter that the Holy Father is answering for us is, who is a woman? So in some ways, this talk this evening is really geared toward men to really help them understand who God has created this woman in your life to be. But it's also for the women who haven't heard this before. And I think so often the understanding and ideas of our culture and our society really seep into our lives in a way in which we don't know and we don't understand. And I'll kind of a little later on share with you some of my own personal experiences in life. As you read the letter, the love and the admiration that the Holy Father has for women is just virtually written on every page of this letter. It's not uncommon to hear women say, "He is reading my heart." That's how beautifully it's written. You would even think it was written by a woman who really understands women. But as we all know, truth resonates within the heart. And it crosses both genders and that. I think it's important to say also that this is not just the thoughts of one man. It's not just the thoughts of St. John Paul II. But in fact, this is in the mind of God, found in Scripture, and interpreted through the teachings of the Church. Gentlemen, this is not just for women to read. It is for men to be able to pick up and to read it and to be able to pray with it. It's been studied here at Our Lady of Good Counsel and across the Archdiocese of Detroit through study groups under the direction of a group that we call Endow, which is Educating on the Nature and Dignity of Woman. It's really been as a facilitator through these studies that I've often heard women comment, "I wish I could do this study with my husband." Or, "I wish that my husband could hear this." So, gentlemen, tonight I'm going to just kind of pull out some highlights for you on what the Holy Father says. But then I kind of had the advantage in that I emailed women who have participated in Endow, who have facilitated Endow, and I said, "I've heard these comments. You wish your husband could hear this. You wish your husband would study this." So I said, "Would you tell me why? What is it you would like your husband, your boyfriend, your brother, your father, what is it that you want them to know about you?" And I can only tell you that they were lengthy. And if you're married, I'm sure, gentlemen, you have just absolutely no doubt. So at the end, I'll just share really some of the highlights that I pulled from some of the comments that I thought the women might be very grateful for me to share. So a little bit about background on the apostolic letter. It was written at the close of the Marian year, which was in 1998. It's written as a meditation, so it's not written in heavy language. It is something that you can pick up and that you can really pray with. As I mentioned earlier, it really seems to strike at a woman's heart when it's read as a meditation. The Holy Father is really asking us to ponder in this apostolic letter, and I'll kind of outline some things for you. But the very first thing is the anthropology of man and woman. So Father really has laid that out very well through Genesis 1 and 2. Pope John Paul II comes back to it, but he originally wrote it in what is known as Theology of the Body, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. And that was a series of his Wednesday audiences, and then it was compiled into a compendium of his talks. But there he really delves deeply into the understanding, into the anthropology of man and woman. He writes about God's intention for the relationship between a man and a woman, and then what happens as a result of original sin. He shares with us his reflections on the themes of Jesus' relationships with women in the Gospels. Now, of course, at the center of this reflection on women is the mother of Jesus, Mary, our model. He talks about the beautiful vocation of not only physical motherhood, but also spiritual motherhood. Virginity for the sake of the kingdom, and then the church as the bride of Christ. But we can even go farther back than the pontificate of the Holy Father, and that is at the closing address of the Second Vatican Council, which would have been right around 1965. The Council Fathers wrote to a number of groups, but this was specific to women. And the Council Fathers wrote, "The hour is coming, in fact, has come, when the vocation of women is being acknowledged in its fullness, the hour in which women acquire in the world an influence, an effect, and a power never hitherto achieved. That is why, at this moment, when the human race is undergoing so deep a transformation, women imbued with the spirit of the gospel can do so much to aid humanity in not falling. The church has entrusted this enormous task of aiding humanity in not falling to women. As women, we should see again and again that it's really been the church, I believe with all my heart, that has been the biggest and the loudest champion for women. And we go all the way back to the scriptures to see how Jesus changed all that. So my dear sisters, the church has called us, and the church needs the active participation of each and every one of us to understand what is our first vocation. What is that God-given vocation that we have? We have to recapture that in order to make a difference in the world. We need to recover that fullness of that vocation. We need to help men understand what the fullness of that vocation is in order to aid humanity in not falling. Both of us together must have the proper understanding of what that vocation is. The apostolic letter, when it was written, was really the Holy Father's way of responding to our culture's need for an authentic feminine presence in the world. Not just in the home. He's saying in the world. What does it mean for women to be a feminine person made in the image of God? And the seeds of what he called the new feminism, the seeds are all spelled out beautifully within this apostolic letter. I may be the oldest one here. I don't know. I'm kind of looking around. Maybe not. There might be a few others in my age group. But some of us remember the feminism of the Gloria Steinems, the Betty Friedans, who wrote The Feminine Mystique, who appeared on all of the talk shows, made the circuit. And I'm going to point out Phil Donahue because that's the one that I remember most clearly for me. But what was really at the center of their message, and the Holy Father will go on to really outline all of the good that the feminist movement has done. But pretty much they said to women, you had no value if you were not contributing to society outside of the home. You had no value if you weren't contributing to society outside of the home. So the old feminism of the 60s and 70s and even into the early 80s really defined a woman by what she did outside of the home. For me, this had a tremendous impact. So, you know, there are those times in your life, like when John Kennedy was assassinated. And this doesn't compare to that, but it had an impact on me. My husband and I were married in 1970. We gave birth to our oldest child in 71. We lived in an upper flat. I see the image as clearly as if it was yesterday. I'm sitting in a rocking chair, and I'm nursing her. And guess who I have on? I have on Phil Donahue, and Gloria Steinem is on. The rants and the raves. This has no value. I looked into the eyes of my daughter, and you know, and moms and dads, you know this when you're feeding? Those eyes are wide and bright and shining and looking right back up at you. And I thought, how could this not have any value? I knew in my heart, again, that God-given tuition that he gives to fathers and mothers, and please, moms and dads, trust it, that there had to be value in this. I knew it. But you know what happened? The wreaked havoc appeared. I was young. I was 21 years old. And I'm thinking, so what do? I say to my husband, okay, this is it. I got to go out and get a job. I have to contribute. I have to really do something that makes a difference. My husband is from the old country. My husband says, nah, you don't need to go out and work. Well, what do you want to go to work for? Because I need to work. I have to help you support this family. And all of that is admirable. The problem for me is the seed that was planted inside my mind that what I was doing wasn't valuable. I thank my husband to this day that he held firm on that. I eventually went to work. I mean, here I am. If anyone told me I'd be giving a talk on a Wednesday evening on a snowy night to all of you, I would have laughed. God had a plan. I just need to be sensitive to pray and to hear what his plan is. But again, so often, even we as women don't understand how those seeds of doubt from the society, from culture, from our friends, from those we work with, can actually crop into our way of thinking. So the Holy Father in this document really goes on to acknowledge that the 20th century was an era of extraordinary progress for women. He's not diminishing what the feminist movement did. There were social and cultural changes that he says were unprecedented in the history of mankind. This almost sounds silly now, but women being given the right to vote, to participate in every level of government, equal pay for equal work. It's almost hard that you have to stand up here and say there was a time when that was not. So the positive things came from it. But what he's saying has happened is that women also lost their understanding of who they really are. They thought they came to a misguided understanding that we have to act like men, we have to talk like men, we have to dress like men, in order to have an impact on the world. So the Holy Father defines what he calls the new feminism. And he writes, and this is actually from Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life, which was written 3 years before he wrote the Apostolic Letter. In transforming culture so that it supports life, women occupy a place in thought and action which is unique and decisive. It depends on them to promote a new feminism which rejects the temptation of imitating models of male domination in order to acknowledge and affirm the true genius of women in every aspect of the life of society and overcome all discrimination, violence, and exploitation. The need to imitate models of male domination. I read that and I often think of what we have going on in different countries in the world where you have a coup and you have one group overthrowing another group and that group ultimately becomes like the group they overthrew. It's very much what we saw happening with women. And we do, and we want to make a difference, but in a positive way. And what happened for so many, and certainly has been my experience, and maybe for some of you, the women became what they disliked the most. Rather than bringing that authentic feminism into the workplace or into the neighborhood, they diminished it. That I need to act, I need to behave more like a man. He has the term in here, the true genius of women. So he really recognizes that and affirms that. And what is that in women? He calls it that essential characteristic that makes a woman a woman. We're much more than what we do. It's about who we are. I'll joke with Father John and I'll say to him that someday when the time comes, if he's still here, I'd love him to do my funeral. And I'll always say to him, Father, do me a favor, because my husband and my kids are going to be out there. Don't put me up here, because my husband and my kids are going to be going, who is he talking about? We don't know her in that way. So it's just the beauty of being able to know like who you are, being authentic, even in the presence of your spouse and your children. So that true genius, that essential spirit or character of a woman, how God made us in his image and likeness is uniquely different for men, and it's uniquely different for a woman. But you know what? Being different isn't more or less. It's not good or bad. It just means exactly that, different. And we both contribute to the world in unique ways. The Holy Father really lays out his vision then for this unique role of women in society, for the relationships between men and women. When he has done this, which is the beauty of it, it's almost like Pope Francis with the joy of the gospel. You're challenging both sides on it. So with the Holy Father in writing this document, he's really challenging the assumptions no matter where people stood on the issue. But the important thing is that he really plowed that pathway for us toward really the promotion of women's authentic dignity. So he does this through the biblical anthropology. So what does scripture tell us about humanity as created in God's image? A major part of this letter is his reflection on women in scripture. And he does just like Father John did 3 weeks ago. He starts with the book of Genesis. And Father did just a beautiful job of really uncovering all of that for us. So please keep that in mind, how Father laid that out for us as I continue to move forward. But there is one verse in the scripture that I think we need to highlight, because that is the fundamental truth of who we are as a human person. Genesis 1 verse 27, God created man in his own image, male and female he created them. In the second account, Father talked about a helper. So in the second account of creation, Adam needs a helper. What does Adam need a helper for? He needs someone who can help him discover and fulfill the deepest purpose of his existence, which he could not find with the animals on the earth, the birds in the air. So Adam found what it meant to love and to be in communion with another person. The woman helps the man, and in turn, the man helps the woman to be fully human. But because the role, as we see it laid out in Genesis, because the role to the woman in particular as a helper is love, that is really meant to play a very special role in her life. A woman's vocation is to call all of humanity to love. And he's going to lay that out, what that looks like for a woman. Well, what do we see in Genesis? Adam immediately rejoices. He recognizes that he is made for relationship, that he is made for communion with another. So then what happens? We have the fall. So guess what? The complementarity that is to exist between the man and the woman, that is designed to lead to communion between the two, instead it's become a source of conflict. It's become just a source of male domination, which we see all too often. In place of what the Holy Father writes about, that mutual self-giving love that is to exist between a man and a woman. The view of a woman being subordinate and inferior to a man is a result of the fall and a consequence of sin. The Holy Father refers to that as a disturbance of that original relationship between the man and the woman. That's in Article 5 of the document. That's a disturbance of that original relationship. He takes us back to the beginning. He says, here we discover a break and a constant threat precisely in regard to this unity of the two, which corresponds to the dignity of the image and likeness of God in both of them. But the threat, he says, is more serious for the woman, since domination takes the place of being a sincere gift of self, and therefore of love for the other. But I think this is key. But at the same time, it also diminishes the true dignity of the man. Man is not the true and living image of God when he abuses physically, emotionally, when there is an abuse of power, when there is ridicule of women, when he lauds the fact that he is a man over a woman, when he objectifies women. That is not a man living out his true, authentic manhood, being made in the image and likeness of God. So again, through all of this, the Holy Father is saying that the women's movement is not saying it shouldn't have happened, but in fact, it was a very good thing. But he wants to affirm the efforts of the contemporary women's movement in the fact that they tried with great diligence and success to correct the injustices that were prevalent against women. But the point of departure from that and with the Holy Father is that he goes back to the foundation. He goes back to the beginning. He goes back to what it is God desired, what God designed. That's the fundamental difference between what our culture teaches and what the church teaches. And that's by going back to the beginning and having the understanding of that anthropology of man and woman. Here he cites some of the problem. In the name of liberation from male domination, women must not appropriate to themselves male characteristics contrary to their own feminine originality. Be true to who you are. If they take this path, instead of reaching fulfillment, they will deform and lose what constitutes their essential richness. I think we've seen that happen. Many women have lost what essentially belongs to them and is their God-given right. There are fundamental differences in our genetic code. We don't need to be a scientist to know that. But there are reasons why man is a man and a woman is a woman. But there's a Christian view, and it's not the world view that offers us the authentic understanding really of what that means. God loved me in my womanhood into existence. And you know what? Because I am a woman, it affects everything that I do. Every aspect of our lives, just as it does for men. It affects how we think, how we see things, how I behave, what kind of a person am I. You know, there's that book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. You just need to take it back further. Why is that? It's so important for us, whether you're thinking about marriage, whether you are married, to go back and try and recapture God's original intent. Because his desire is for us to be happy in whatever vocation that he has placed us in. Sexuality characterizes man and woman not only on their physical level, but also on the psychological and spiritual, making its mark on each of their expressions. That phrase, the body reveals the person, and that outward manifestation reveals who I am as a daughter of God or as a son of God. So how I am created actually reveals who I am. Being male or female is not simply a matter of biology. And I think, unfortunately, society and culture has boiled it down to that. So you're the same, you just have a different physical outward appearance. But that's not true, because the fundamental makeup of who we are affects our personality. It affects my feelings. It affects how I'm going to express those feelings. I'm going to express my feelings different than what my husband does. But when I know that as a woman and that I am a daughter of God, when I can embrace and really cherish my femaleness, then I know how to behave. Then I know what those set of expectations are for me that God has. Not culture and not the society. Do you guys remember when that term unisex was coined? To this day, I think that was probably the worst disservice that ever happened to us. Unisex. There's nothing different about anybody. They just have a different physical appearance, but we are absolutely all the same. But when we began to reject who we are as men and women, as males and females, we began to reject how it is we are supposed to behave, how it is we are supposed to respond, and that it had a significant impact on our culture. Men and women have the same human nature, he writes, but they have it in different but yet complementary ways. As a wife, I often work out of myself, why can't he just think like I do? Because I know I got it right. This was before all of this. It's why so often when women take the study, they go, I wish I would have known this. I think it would prevent an awful lot of arguments between husbands and wives. At least that was my experience. Why can't you just think like I do? Why don't you see it this way? Why don't you see that we should be raising our children this way and not that way? How often that friction goes on in a relationship. Yeah, I met Father John in 2001, began to study this, and went, oh my goodness, this just really all makes sense. Now I see it. Now I get it. So he says they have the same human nature, but they have it in different yet complementary ways. And he goes on to say, the unity does not cancel out the diversity. It's a beautiful way of looking at it. The unity that we have, made in the image and likeness of God, does not cancel out the diversity of how that is lived out. Another part of the document, he goes on, quotes some of the church fathers who are really pointing out the key role of a woman in the fall, and then how it had to be atoned by a woman in the mystery of redemption. So you have Adam and Eve walking in the cool of the garden. They bring the stain of original sin on humanity through their pride and disobedience. And remember, it was both. It was Adam and Eve. I think it's very significant as to who God calls out to first. He calls out to Adam. After eating the apple, he says, have you eaten from the tree? What does Adam say? The woman who you put here with me, she gave me fruit from the tree, so I ate it. So I read that and I go, he's not only throwing her under the bus, he's throwing God under the bus. Because had you not put her with me, she wouldn't have given me the apple and I wouldn't have eaten it. You know what? As a woman, I want to go, hey, buddy, step up to the plate. Take ownership. This is headship, but I do think it's very significant that it's Adam who God goes to first. But then immediately, what do we see after the fall? We see that God sets up a woman as Satan's adversary. So God promises to us a new Eve, and that new Eve is found in Mary. And the Holy Father really puts Mary now at the center of this meditation. So immediately after the fall, he exalts woman to her honored place. And it's going to be through a woman that the salvation of mankind is given. But we see the contrast between the original Eve and the new Eve, Mary our mother. That Mary is humble, she's obedient, she gives her consent, her fiat to the angel. And Mary with humility and submission to what God is asking of her fulfills that vocation as the new Eve. Starting about the end of chapters 14 into 15, he then talks about women as guardians of the gospel message. He talks about the Samaritan woman, the woman at the well. He talks about Martha and Mary, and then he moves to the crucifixion. And at the foot of the cross, we also see that women have a major role to play. While all the apostles, he says, except John, flee at the scene, we see Jesus' mother and other women who remained near him. Christ speaks to women about the things of God, and they understand them. There is a true resonance of mind and heart and a response of faith from the women who Jesus encountered. And we all know the story of the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, who was there midday by herself, because of how she was living her life. She couldn't even go to draw water from the well with other women. She was an outcast. The Lord speaks to her. It resonates in her heart. She is forever changed so that she can go back and minister and bring to the people that wouldn't even speak to her the beautiful message that Jesus had. They even recognized in her that she had been changed. He points out that the most arduous test of faith and fidelity, that the women proved stronger than the apostles, and that we have great strength. We can change the world when we know who God has created us to be, and we understand that it is only with His grace that we can do it. In Article 16, he writes about how it is fitting then that women were also the first witnesses to the resurrection. We know it. We hear it every Easter in the passage. The first to hear the Easter proclamation that He is risen is Mary Magdalene. And then she is known as the apostle to the apostles, that she is able to bear witness to them of the risen Lord. In chapter 17, or Article 17, he goes on to talk about motherhood and virginity both being found in Mary. She had made a promise to remain a virgin, and our good and merciful God honored her promise, and she remained a virgin while yet giving birth. So she becomes the mother of the Savior of the world. So really want to focus on motherhood, as that really is the fruit of the union between a man and a woman that probably most of you here this evening are, whether it's physical motherhood or spiritual motherhood, is a result of that union then between man and woman. This, the Holy Father says, brings about that special gift of self that comes through that gift of motherhood. It's an expression of that spousal love whereby the two are united so closely that the two become one. So she gives herself to him, and in her receptivity, what she is saying is, I accept new life. Should that be God's will, I accept the new life that comes from this. To be human requires that gift of self, that mutual self-giving that Father talks about. And that really is that foundational aspect of the genius of woman, of being an authentic woman. That receptivity that is not only biologically in us, but spiritually and emotionally. It's not just physical. It's the total package of who God has created us to be. So there's that receptivity that we adapt within our minds and within our hearts. I think the distinction between men is that we would say, and we see this again from the scriptures, that men are more generative. Men are called to give their lives. Isn't that what Father talked to you about in Ephesians 5? Even unto death, it says, for the defense and the protection of women. When I first started working with Father John at St. John Center, we were actually assigned there to do a model pre-marriage prep program for the diocese. And we would have the couples for a weekend. And I'd remember just talking to the young women that were engaged. And I'd say, he's not going to do that for you. If you don't think he's going to do that for you, don't marry him. Because you're worth more. Your value is more. Do you believe that he will do that for you? And if you can say yes with all of your heart, then he's the right man. I like to tell a story, but to me it just speaks to the beauty of having Christ at the center of marital love. I had traveled to Bosnia and Herzegovina probably about 5 or 6 times, but one time I was there, we were at an orphanage, and during the war, these infants had lost everybody. They lost parents and grandparents and cousins, just entire families. Well, I remember working at this orphanage and being able to look out the window, and you have all of these open fields. There's a bride and a groom coming across the open field, and he has the crucifix in his hand. And, of course, they don't wait until they get to the church before they see one another. So they gather at a home, and the whole family is coming behind them. And I asked someone about the crucifix that he was carrying, and I think this might be a local custom in our area. But it was explained to me that when they go to the priest and they ask to be married, the priest gives them a crucifix that they should keep and pray with until the day of their wedding. They bring it back to the church on their wedding day. And at the end of the wedding ceremony, the priest joins their hands and the crucifix is placed in between them. And he takes his stole, and he wraps it around and ties their hands together and talks to them that this is a reminder that the source of your love is him. Take it now to your home together and place it on a wall where you will kneel together every day and ask forgiveness of one another. It's a beautiful witness to the source of the love between a man and a woman. Motherhood implies from the beginning a special openness to the new person, and this is precisely the woman's part. In this openness in conceiving and in giving birth to a child, the woman discovers herself through a sincere gift of self. He also goes on to say, motherhood involves a special communion with the mystery of life as it develops in the woman's womb. The mother is filled with wonder at this mystery of life and understands with unique intuition. It's really interesting how so often this word is used, that intuition, as mothers and dads, as husbands and wives. There is a God-given intuition that's given to us to trust it, to listen to it. We don't need to listen to the Oprahs and the Phil Donahues of the world to find out how we're supposed to raise our children or how are we supposed to have a happy marriage. The mother is filled with wonder at the mystery of life and understands with unique intuition what is happening inside of her. In the light of the beginning, the mother accepts and loves as a person the child she is carrying in her womb. This unique contact with the new human being developing within her gives rise to an attitude towards human beings, not only towards her own child, but every human being, which profoundly marks the woman's personality. So again, the way we are built physically impacts us in mind, body, and spirit, in totality as a woman. It is commonly thought that women are more capable than men of paying attention to another person, and that motherhood develops this predisposition even more. The man, even with all his sharing in parenthood, always remains outside the process of pregnancy and the baby's birth. In many ways, he has to learn his fatherhood from the mother. Adam learned what it meant to love and to receive love from Eve. So as a son, as a husband, as a father, you learn your fatherhood from the mother. One can say that this is part of the normal human dimension of parenthood, including the stages that follow the birth of the baby, especially the initial period. The child's upbringing, taken as a whole, should include the contribution of both parents. In any event, the mother's contribution is decisive in laying the foundation for a new human personality. There's another quote from the Holy Father, which I didn't put in here, but he talks about how the child learns the love of God through the eyes of the mother. And you go back and you think again how God created us to give life and also to be able to nurse children. When you're feeding that child, there's like 6 inches, and you're looking at that child. The child learns the love of God through the eyes of the mother. Women's bodies are designed by God. I happen to think that there is nothing more beautiful than the sight of a woman that is carrying a child. We see that beauty really found in a pregnant woman. It's interesting. I was listening to a talk show one day about a year ago on my way in, and one of the hosts said he is repulsed by the sight of a pregnant woman. Do you not see the beauty of new life? And this was a married man, but no children. In God's eternal plan, woman is the one in whom the order of the love in the created world of person first takes root. So it's written into our physiology. That genius of women is written into who we are. We make room for another, not only physically, but with our eyes and with our heart. Again, I think back to growing up, and my dad would always say to me, "You're a champion of the underdogs. You are always taking up a cause." And I felt odd. That was not a compliment from him to me. It's like, you're always taking up a cause. You're always taking up someone else's side. And it really, really wasn't until I understood why that tension was there. I saw things differently. I mean, it was a good dad, so I'm not saying that. But it was like there was always this tension because I could just see things in a different light. So I was a champion for a number of causes in my younger days. Man, the Holy Father teaches, always stands in some sense outside the process, learning a significant part of his role as a son, as a husband, and father from woman. So he goes on to say, women has a great service to render to humanity as a custodian of the person and as a custodian of the family. And that is whether it's a woman who's literally a mother or a woman who's exercising spiritual motherhood. By seeing persons from the heart, he says, and bringing the truth about the human person to wherever they work and wherever they serve. This is not about being barefoot, pregnant, and in the kitchen. This is about being able to see with the eyes of the heart, no matter where you're at. Bring it into your workplace. Bring it into the civic arena. Bring it into the church. In God's eternal plan, which is there, woman is the one with whom the order of the created world of person first takes root. That quote that really resonates within my heart is how women do see with the eyes of their heart, no matter where they are in the world, no matter what their vocation is in the world. Again, this is not about working moms and non-working moms. As an endowed facilitator, there is nothing that can create a split in a group than that division between working moms and non-working moms. This is about living out your vocation. No matter where you're at, no matter where God has placed you, it's about bringing the feminine genius, who you are, into that workplace, into your home, into your neighborhoods, into the church. It applies to women of every age. Applies to women of every vocation, applies to our daughters, it applies to our granddaughters, to be able to carry out that mission that God has given us, no matter where he has placed us. The Holy Father, there's another letter that he wrote in 1995, and it was actually issued after this apostolic letter. In Endow, you study it before because it's a more easy document to understand, but it was written right before the UN Conference on Women in Beijing. And in that, he's really urging a greater involvement by all women in all areas of public life. He says women enrich the workplace as women. I think even at St. John's Center, we always remarked how beautiful, at least we prayed, that we resemble the church as a whole because you have a priest, you have a deacon, you had a married woman, you had a married man, you had a single woman, you had a single man. So you see how the body of Christ can work together beautifully to carry out the mission that has been entrusted to us. I know I'm getting a little short on time. So, the receptivity is the foundational characteristic of a woman. So when she works within her natural receptive nature, she's personally fulfilled. From that, the other three flow. The sensitivity that a woman shows, the generosity, and then, of course, the maternity. And again, that's biological or spiritual maternity. What I want to be able to do, though, is really read the closing statement of the Holy Father in this apostolic letter. I think it's beautifully written, and if women have read this already, I think it does us good to be able to hear this again. And it's by Article 31, in case you have the document. Jesus says to the Samaritan woman during one of those remarkable conversations, which show his great esteem for the dignity of women, and for the vocation which enables them to share in his messianic mission. The present reflections, now at an end, have sought to recognize within the gift of God what he, as creator and redeemer, entrusts to women, to every woman. In the spirit of Christ, in fact, women can discover the entire meaning of their femininity and thus be disposed to making a sincere gift of self to others. Thereby, in doing that, they find themselves. Therefore, the church gives thanks for each and every woman, for mothers, for sisters, for wives, for women consecrated to God in virginity, for women dedicated to the many human beings who await the gratuitous love of another person, for women who watch over the human persons in the family, which is the fundamental sign of the human community. For women who work professionally and who at times are burdened by a great social responsibility. For perfect women and for weak women. For all women as they have come forth from the heart of God in all the beauty and richness of their femininity, as they have been embraced by His eternal love, as together with men, they are pilgrims on this earth, which is the temporal homeland of all people, and is transformed sometimes into a valley of tears, as they assume together with men a common responsibility for the destiny of humanity, according to daily necessities, and according to that definitive destiny which the human family has in God Himself, in the bosom of the ineffable Trinity. The Church gives thanks for all of the manifestations of the feminine genius, which have appeared in the course of history, in the midst of all peoples and nations. She gives thanks for all the charisms which the Holy Spirit distributes to women in the history of the people of God, for all the victories which she owes to their faith, hope, and charity. She gives thanks for all the fruits of feminine holiness. The Church asks at the same time that these invaluable manifestations of the Spirit, which the great generosity are poured forth upon the daughters of the eternal Jerusalem, may be attentively recognized and appreciated so that they may return for the common good of the Church and of all of humanity, especially in our times. Meditating on the biblical mystery of the woman, the Church prays this mystery of all women may discover themselves and their supreme vocation. And that concludes the apostolic letter. So before you have a chance to talk about the discussion questions together, I just want to share with you some of the comments from women that they may want you as men to know. Number one, and which seemed to flow through all women's comments, women want to be cherished by their husbands. And I'm actually going to read what they wrote. I don't want to nuance. We have been bestowed by that uniqueness to make room for another, to see with the eyes of our heart, to give of ourselves physically, emotionally, and spiritually. But sometimes we just start feeling empty. If a man learns how to make his wife know how much he cherishes her, she will give more of herself. It's not the gifts, it's not the things that make a woman feel cherished. It's by you being truly present to her when you are with her. And that's key. So a couple of ideas. Give her your eyes totally. Be present to her totally when she is speaking. Don't be looking at the TV. Don't have your nose in the book. Don't be looking at the computer screen. Now, ladies, when you have these opportunities and you want to speak to your husbands, don't do it on Super Bowl Sunday when there's 1 minute left in the game. Choose your time wisely. Be respectful. It goes both ways. But guys, when you're doing that, what the women are saying is that without saying it, you're saying you don't care. That's how she's hearing it. That's what she's feeling. Make a covenant before God to never look with desire or lust at another woman, whether it's on TV, in a magazine, or at work. Your looking at pornography diminishes her self-worth. Don't hang out with other females one-on-one. Use wisdom. Guard your marriage and guard the marriages of others. Men in word and deed need to openly speak against society turning women into objects. It's not a subject that men should be silent on. Don't let sarcastic speech have any place in your home, not even jokingly. It pierces her heart. Again, personal experience, I have two brothers. My sister-in-laws have a halo around their head. Both of my brothers are very disparaging to their wives in public in front of their children and then say, oh, it's just a joke. I wish they'd only look at their wife's face and when that's happening. And this doesn't just apply to women, but be quick to forgive, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Women want to feel safe and protected. We can appear to be strong on the exterior, and I do think we are very strong, but women do desire to be cared for. Women want men to exercise appropriate leadership, appropriate headship. Listen to your wives, as God has given them unique insights, and they want to be able to share them with you. Again, when we were at St. John Center and we were really kind of expounding on the uniqueness of being a woman, it's really hard to do if you don't have someone speaking to men. They have to go really hand in hand. I think if women know that their husbands are men of prayer in making their decisions, I think if women believe that their opinion has been heard and yet the husband feels the decision still needs to go another way, if you're men of prayer, your women will get behind you and support you. And women, I say, when that happens, even if it ends up being the wrong decision, but you know he made it with good intentions and through prayer, be supportive. But the key to that is that men are men of prayer. They want you to be the ones that get up and take the kids to church. And the comment after that was for men to remember that that grace attracts new graces in a marriage. Women desire intimacy, and they don't want the men in their lives to mistake intimacy for sex. In fact, the marital act means so much more when intimacy happens outside of the bedroom. Intimacy can happen in a great conversation, a kiss or a hug, an unexpected night out, a thoughtful act, and even the shared experiences that you have together. Women can never be hugged too much or too often. They cause us to take a brief time out from the world. Hugs speak that it is you and me against the world. Hugs say you matter, you are beautiful, you are important, you are mine. A hug from a husband is like a brief and unspoken renewal of our vows. Pray with her every day when she is there with you. Thank God in her presence for this beautiful gift of a woman that he has given you. The richest gift you can give your wife is a heart that abides in the heart of Christ. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Christ is the Answer with Father John Ricardo. For more information about this program, go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the audio archive. Join us next time for Christ is the Answer on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Jesus Christ.